Blog Talk Radio.
Love that music. Kate Thompson, everyone. Kate Thompson here and Kate Thompson live here at, where are we? We are here in New Jersey, and we are getting ready to do the show. There's a lot of things happening in the air, on the air in the country, as a matter of fact. You know, we're listening in on the hurricane, what's going on all over the country. We're also listening to information and having the information about Ebola. So it's a lot of hot news items that we're going to be dealing with. We're going to be joined, of course, by my co-host and son, Eric Payne, and he's going to be joining us. We're also going to be joined by Wayne Gilman, who is also one of the co-hosts here on Kate Thompson Live, and also with Brianna Scott, because she's going to give us a weather report, you know, what's happening in Bermuda, because she is a correspondent from Bermuda. Don't forget, this is Kate Thompson Live, and it is 9 p.m. here in New Jersey. Bad weather all over, raining, you know, and, wow, real serious hurricane and that kind of thing. And Brianna, let me see. I think we can push this button right here and talk and see if we can get to Brianna, because she's going to be doing, telling us what's going on in Bermuda.
Yep, I'm here to give an update from the perspective of someone that lives in Bermuda, but I'm actually not in Bermuda right now. I'm just seeing all the weather updates on the Weather Channel and everything right now, because I believe the premier, Michael Dunkley, just spoke and gave a press a little about the condition of Bermuda right now. Tomorrow it's supposed to actually take a hit. Tomorrow afternoon, Thursday, about in around the afternoon time. So everyone right now in Bermuda, I've spoken to my mom and my friends, a few of my family members in Bermuda, and they're all getting their supplies, you know, like water bottles, and boarding up their houses and getting anything, flashlights, tape, and reconstruction, anything that will help after and during the storm while we have to be in our houses. So a lot of the power is out right now. There's still about 1,900 people without power. I believe my family actually just got the power back in our houses. Right now, everyone's just bracing for tomorrow because there's no school tomorrow for my brothers and a lot of our friends. Most schools are closed, and most other things are closing at around 1 p.m. tomorrow, and everything Bermuda shut down on Friday. The airport shut down, and right now everyone's just hoping for the best and that it's not going to be anything like our previous hurricane, which was in 2003, Hurricane Fabian. So everyone's just bracing for the worst, but hoping for the best right now.
Okay, Brianna, thank you very much for that. I know that you are here and your family, the rest of the family is in Bermuda, and we're keeping track of everything. Another hot button issue is...
Hey, hello.
Yes. Love them.
Hi, this is Eric. Hey, how you doing? I'm just trying to get in on the conversation. Bree, what kind of precautions, you said the precautions that you guys take sound like the pretty standard hurricane and tornado type precautions that people may take here in the United States, right? But being that you're an island, I always wonder the precautions that people, are there extra precautions that people live on an island, and Bermuda is particularly small as well. So there's, you know, on the mainland, bigger countries, people can go to higher ground or, so to speak, outrun the storm. But, you know, on an island, you have really, you know, if it really gets crazy, I would assume that there's really no place to run. So what kind of precautions that would make it unique to going through that experience on an island that you might know of that the island takes?
Well, definitely. There are a few just because, like they even mentioned, as everyone's been mentioning, we're just an island in the middle of the ocean, Atlantic Ocean. So we can't just call in the next state for help or anyone really that's connected to us. We have to call help from overseas, which they are doing. They're flying in a few people from a few crew members to help from the Bahamas and the British Virgin Islands and a few of the other islands just to help, just to be there, just as to reinforce any activity that might end up happening with the trees or the power lines. And right now, the most current thing is the fact that there's a causeway that connects one end of the island to the next. And the problem with our last major hurricane, which was Fabian, like I mentioned, which was in 2003, that was completely demolished. And the problem is that our hospital is on the mainland. So that causeway connects the airport, St. George's and St. David's, which is the eastern end of the island, to the western end, the rest of the part of the island. So everyone's taking precautions from their houses. If they're staying in St. George's and St. David's, anyone that's living on a hill right now is basically going to either Cedar Bridge, is a high school that is open from 3 p.m. on Thursday, I believe, or I'm not sure if it's Thursday or Friday, but it's a shelter for everyone to go if they're in a not such a safe place right now. So there, those are the precautions we take where, you know, where we have to fly people over. Right now they're sending storm watchers. My mom was actually on a flight headed to Bermuda. She landed today, and she met someone on the flight that was a storm chaser and a reporter just to actually give an update for everyone back where he's from, and that was a flight from Atlanta to Bermuda. So there's a few people going to Bermuda. There's no more flights as of 9 p.m. tomorrow. So other than the people, the crews that are flying in to help. So those are the unique precautions that we have to take to make sure Bermuda basically doesn't really get too disastrous.
What was the situation with the last hurricane, with the boats and the people who had their boats docked and, you know, some of the other things? What was this situation?
Well, the problem with this this particular timing of this next hurricane coming tomorrow is that we were just recently hit this past weekend also.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday night and Sunday, early Sunday morning, there was a tropical storm. They called it Tropical Storm Faye, which ended up being more than a tropical storm because everyone in Bermuda, just hearing from my friends and everyone, all the pictures I've seen with the flag, the power lines are down the floor on the street, the palm trees are broken, laying on people's houses, there's churches closed, you know, every government building is closed as of tomorrow, but they are actually wish they could have taken those precautions last week when I said the Tropical Storm Faye hit on Sunday morning, because it was pretty devastating, and that was not even a hurricane. So now with this Category 4 hurricane, jumping back and forth to Category 3 and Category 4, depending on the winds, which are 120 to 130 miles per hour right now, there's already a lot of destruction from this hurricane, this Tropical Storm Faye. So they're trying to work fast and cleaning up Bermuda before the next one hits. So
yeah.
That's pretty
so
big problem.
So you'll keep us up to date about what's going on.
Yes.
And we'll keep up to date. And also, Eric, we're going to be talking about Ebola. So
just take a quick second to point out that we have Wayne also on the line. Wayne, our co-host, Wayne Gilman, and Wayne being from an island himself and his family comes from an island. I just wanted to hear his ideas and notions on this experience. Wayne, are you online?
Hi, good evening.
Hello, Wayne.
Hi, good evening, Kay, Brianna, and Eric. Thank you very much. Yeah, I had been watching with half an eye because I've been overwhelmed with this Ebola crisis that we're facing. But, you know, it's very disturbing what goes on in hurricane season. And usually it comes from the eastern Windward Islands in the Caribbean off from Africa. Somehow it just starts in that area, usually on the east coast of the United States. When you get hurricanes, it's coming from that direction. And then it goes up the eastern seaboard. And, of course, Bermuda being right off the coast of North Carolina, that could be a direct hit or it could be a direct miss, depending upon, you know, the track of the storm. But it's frightening. And you know, I mean, I used to travel back and forth to Trinidad when I was a kid, and I've never really witnessed anything as bad there as I have witnessed in the States, you know. Usually it's just percolating when it's in the southeast Caribbean seas. you know, what I have suffered through is like earthquakes, which I don't wish on anyone. I mean, I was in one as a child, and I saw a whole cow swallowed by the earth. That was enough for me to beg my parents to bring me back to Brooklyn.
In the Virgin Islands?
As a child, yeah. You know, my grandmother.
I didn't know they had earthquakes. That's interesting.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
something
well,
that you wouldn't naturally assume. Obviously, islands, you could have earthquakes anywhere, depending on the fault lines. But I was unaware that there are fault lines that lie beneath the Virgin Islands.
Yeah. Well, this is further south than the Virgin Islands. This is right next to the equator, where only like if the way New York looks at New Jersey, Trinidad
mm-hmm.
looks at Venezuela. You know, so it's that close and it's that far south. So anything tropical can happen. And then, as your mother knows, because I'm certain she's been to Montserrat, if memory serves, I know that at one point we used to cover a lot of. Montserrat news, and you know there's a natural volcano in Montserrat, so you know even living in that location can be terrifying depending upon what the circumstances are. But we're in the midst, or I guess the tail end of the hurricane season, so you know it's possible that anything could pop up between now and then. Now and at the very end, I think it's November, at the end of November, if I'm not mistaken. And we're lucky that we've gotten this far without any major storms.
Yeah.
I would assume that the geography in that part of the world is probably a little bit different than in Bermuda, which is kind of not too far from Florida. Would that be correct, Brianna?
Very different. I would say that just because, just to reiterate again, we're not really close to anything, any other islands, really. A lot of people have a misconception about Bermuda that it's, actually, we have the same accent as like most of the other islands, like Jamaica or the Bahamas or Barbados. We actually we're pretty far from them, so we have a completely different accent, different way of a different culture, different everything. So though we are an island, we're actually not really considered to be in the Caribbean necessarily. So you know, it's kind
right.
of different. And I know that this Hurricane Gonzalo did just pass through St. Martin and. I believe, and there is already one person confirmed dead. Two people are missing right now, and these are people that were standing around the water. The person that was confirmed that passed away was on a boat. So with this information, the Bermudians are now rushing around, and we're used to this season also, this hurricane season. Everyone's used to this hurricane season, but we, like I said, we haven't had a hurricane this big since 2003, so everyone is rushing around Bermuda really just trying to get everything boarded up, safe, and locked
down.
Yeah,
and I want to say this, too, now, with this report that Brianna is doing, you know, is current. She was just talking to Brian Scott, her dad, in Bermuda, so we have the up-to-date report that what's actually happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
We wish them well, and we'll be keeping people up to date, you know, as we go through the show. Of course, we're only on Wednesdays from 8 to 9, but we try to bring everybody information that they can use. Okay, so thank you for that, Bree. You know, hanging there with us. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being here. Okay, another thing, Eric, we're going to be talking to Wayne about, and that is about a friend of ours, Pam Hayes, and I think her last name is Hayes. I don't remember that. I don't know. For some reason, I have a lapse in memory because I'm trying to remember a whole lot of things here. And she's going to be.
You have it right, Kay.
Right?
No, I said you have her name is, Attorney Pam Hayes, yeah.
Okay. Go ahead with that, Wayne. Is Pam on the line?
Well, I'm not sure if she's on yet, but I know we were talking not long ago, and gave her the instructions to be a participant in the show. But there's so much going on. I mean, you have the Ebola situation. Hillary Clinton is campaigning. It looks that way in Kentucky, although she has not formally announced. Interestingly enough, with all that's going on in Texas with the Ebola scare, President Obama has abandoned plans to campaign in the Northeast. At least he was scheduled to come to Connecticut tomorrow and today, if I'm not mistaken.
And he was also scheduled, if I could just jump in here, to be in New Jersey, Union, New Jersey, as well today.
Is that right?
And just to kind of also add to your points about Hillary Clinton, we know she's actually in Kentucky campaigning for Alison Grimes out there trying to give a lift to her senatorial race against Mitch McConnell. So we, I was just watching earlier, as a matter of fact, on the Chris Matthews show, and she was getting ready to actually come be introduced, so they were going to cut away to her speech and her appearance there at Alice, at an affair for Allison Grimes, challenger to Mitch McConnell.
Right.
And I'm sorry, go ahead, Wayne.
No. I was just agreeing with you. In fact, I happened to see a segment of the very same thing a moment ago, and if I'm not mistaken, I think Bill Clinton was there as well on the stomp, you know, for her. But you know, the Chris Matthews was saying that she, contrary to some of the other, contrary to her husband, has been very selective with whom she is seen with politically, and. You know, I guess her manner is a little different from what Bill was a friend to everybody. He would challenge anyone, you know, that sort of thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how her campaign goes. But I know in Connecticut there's a tight race going on, and an Obama appearance, at least the incumbent governor, was praying for that because it would make a difference. You know, Connecticut is very funny. Sometimes it could be a little red. And sometimes it can be a little blue, you know. And and I really think that, you know, if Obama's comes up or at least has some participation, you know, the governor would easily win re-election. But they're concerned about that. And of course, you know, you have the gubernatorial contest here in New York with Cuomo and Astorino, my county executive here in Westchester. And you know, I really don't think. Beg your pardon?
I said Astorino is your county executive?
Yeah. He's the county executive here. And, you know, he's been admired among Democrats and Republicans because he has that crossover effect. The one thing that I have to say, I supported him in his reelection because he was going to keep Westchester property taxes down. I crossed party lines for that because the challenger wasn't thinking that way at all. But and the challenger is the mayor of New Rochelle, but at the time. But the thing is that I'm not really sold on the rest of his campaign and the very things that he espouses on a regular basis. So
did he keep his promise to keep property taxes down?
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
You said you crossed party lines and voted for him because he promised to keep
property taxes down.
As a county executive, is that correct?
Yeah, that's it. That's the
And I'm just wondering, did he keep promise? I mean, how long has he been in office and has that been able to take place in terms of him keeping your property taxes down? Did he actually keep that campaign promise?
Yeah, well, I mean, he upheld that, and Cuomo realizes that Westchester, which is one of the heavily taxed areas in the country, I mean, they're you know, because of the big draw up here, the school systems, you know, the beautiful houses in some areas, not to say that I live in one of them, but the bottom line is that taxes are a killer. I mean, in New York City, for instance, if I may take a moment just to show you the difference, where I am is no more than 4 miles away from the Bronx, and what the average homeowner would pay in a two-family house in the Bronx would be anywhere from $3,000, $3,500, rarely $4,000 a year in taxes, and mine start at 18. And I tell you, sometimes I can't even see the difference in the neighborhoods. I do know the school systems are better. But the bottom line is that Westchester doesn't really have the infrastructure, you know, the way New York can. And that's it. There's a draw to bring the tech world to Westchester. One time it was IBM was very big in Hastings, not Hastings, Austin, in Westchester County, and that would offset. But, you know, there have been so many changes with different administrations and things that have gone on. And you know, even the price of food, I mean, just the common basic things are so expensive that, you know, it's got to stop somewhere. I really, you know, and the housing stock isn't what it used to be. I mean, housing is just slowly making a comeback now. But there are a lot of people who are swimming underwater, And that's another thing too. I mean, why am I paying tremendous sums of money for something that's not even worth what it used to be?
I want to know what's being done about the homeless people in New York. I want to know what's being done about the homeless veterans, you know, in New York, and of course all over the
I just want to point out that in Jersey too, we also have pretty high property taxes as well. So it's notoriously high here in Jersey as well. I want to also point out to you guys that we have been joined. I think this might be Pamela Hayes. Is this you, caller? Pam, is that you?
It is. Good evening to all of you.
Yes, hi, Pam. How are you?
It's good to hear you.
Yes, I know. Glad to have you join us. What's the story?
What's the big story? In New York City, as I see it, the biggest story was this dust-up where this woman from Al Sharpton's organization is talking about she was raped after she went to this lawyer's home who's associated with the organization, and that he does a lot of cases for them. And, you know, everybody is just sort of jaw-dropped about the entire thing.
Yeah. So what is that doing? Dropped him.
Well, you know, the DA is investigating the case, and she suggested that, number one, she went to this man's house voluntarily. Number two, you know, she had a friend with her, and she sent the friend home. This is in the wee hours of the morning. And three, you know, they're alleging that there's a camera in the doorway that shows that she wasn't intoxicated or anything. And
uh-oh,
it's just somewhat difficult for the DA. I wouldn't want to be the sex crime prosecutor on this case because it's typically he say, she say. And, you know, that's generally not enough probable cause to go with it if, in fact, those factors that I considered show consent.
Mm.
Yeah, that's
what
Pam,
it's
this is Eric Payne. And that's,
hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. You know, that's unfortunate, you know, and that's really what it comes down to when, you know, those of us that watch the lawyer shows and see beyond a reasonable doubt, but, and we know that sometimes the United States, a reasonable doubt in certain cases has been very reasonable and people have still gotten off, but, or never gotten convicted. It's unfortunate that even with, that they use each one of those points as if to suggest that where she potentially raped, that makes it okay. You know, that I mean, you know, I hate when they throw out these things. Well, she went to the house voluntarily and stayed there late and this and that.
But that's a defense to rape. You got to remember, the only
question yeah, that is a defense.
In
I'm just,
rape
it's unfortunate
is, how, was it consensual?
How throwing those points out. Yeah.
But how, you know, even if you didn't use those things, then it would be rape. But if the law says, excuse me, 182, take the left. I'm sorry. What was I telling you? You know, when you have a defense to a crime, you know, you got to use it. If it wasn't a rape, well, then, you know, it just wasn't a rape. But if it was, even with this defense, it wouldn't matter. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly my point.
So, you know, I hate the fact that, you know, you know, women who are, in fact, abused sexually have to go through this. But it's just all part of the criminal justice system. And the bottom line is, you know, if somebody stole something from you and the person who's supposed to be the thief says, Oh, no. It was given to me. That's still the same thing, and you'd have to look at that particular case
right.
and go from there. So that's
right.
how that works. It's really
Pam, I'd like to go in a different direction, and I want to talk about police-community relations. Now, you know, the Eric Garner case, where the young man, you know, who was selling something on the street, and, of course, he was placed in a chokehold, and he eventually died. So what is what's the upshot with that? What's the update thing? Case,
well,
you know?
The Staten Island DA would have to present the case to the grand jury. My understanding is that is, in fact, what he was doing. Okay? And
why wouldn't he do
to,
it?
Well,
why wouldn't he do
I don't know if he's finished. I don't know if he's finished. I was told that he was in the process of doing it. So we don't know if it's finished or not. You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I hear you.
And that's the problem of what's going on there. But, you know, grand juries are a really strange thing. You know, the former chief judge said you could indict a ham sandwich.
Yeah.
And he's really not, because there's nobody there but the DA. There is no cross-examination. The decedent can't testify because he's dead. So, you know, it's problematic in that regard.
It sounds like you're hesitating. What is it that you can't say?
That I can't say. There's nothing I can't say. You know, I think it should be an indictment. 1, 2, 3. It's sort of hard. I think it was overforced. And, you know, it's also a question of the federal law in this case and whether or not, you know, even if you don't get a state court, even if you don't get a state court indictment, you still might be able to get a federal indictment. So,
see the basis one indictment.
There are a lot of options available, but the first one they are proceeding under is the DA's office, and that's what everybody is waiting for. I mean, I think it's just to watch that videotape is horrific in terms of, you know, why you would even have him in any kind of hold. I mean, what's the big deal? Selling some cigarettes, and they didn't even know if he was selling any cigarettes. So it's problematic to me in that regard.
Yeah, and to everyone else. Now, we see the video. It's in everyone's face, and there's a hesitation. What is wrong with the people in Staten Island?
I don't know what the hesitation would
about
be.
Staten Island over the years.
I think.
No, I bet.
Well,
I
you know what? It's
yeah,
a lot of police officers live there, number one. You know, some of them are biased in favor of their colleagues, their neighbors, whatever. You know, so that's to be expected. But my attention is put on the DA in the county. It's up to him to make a swift determination. I can't tell you how long it'll take for him to make this presentation, but one needs to decide what's going on, because there are a lot of ramifications. Like, if you don't find that there's probable cause for an indictment in this case or sufficient evidence in this case to get an indictment, you just can't re-indict him with another grand jury. You would have to go to the feds and ask them to take a look at it. But, you know, there is no hesitation on my part. My thing was like, oh, my God. I you know, who wants to look at that? It's horrific.
Right. I have a question, if I can. The grand jury system and that process. Now, you're saying that the DA has to present evidence to a grand jury that could then be indictable and indict this person. Is that how it works? If you could just give us a
thrill. It's about 23 or 24 people in the grand jury, I think it's 23, and they listen to the evidence, and they make a call. Should we charge this person with a crime or not? The grand jury is the formal process that we use in New York State as well as in New Jersey, because I'm admitted there too. And, you know, that's the way they do it. And if you don't get your indictment, you're going to have some problems, okay?
And then just so I can follow this correctly now, once that indictment does, they do an indictment, then it goes to another court where that person will be tried in front of a jury. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. Because the grand jury is not a court. You got to remember that. That's just 12 people meeting in a prosecutor's room. 23 people or 24 people working in a prosecutor's room making a determination as to whether or not there's sufficient probable cause to formally charge the person.
I see. So they kind of sift through the basic basis of the very basic level of whether there's probable cause. Now, what are the limitations? Now, you describe where the DA isn't allowed to call witnesses. What is that?
DA is allowed to call witnesses, but in the case we were speaking about, he can't call the decedent. The man's dead to tell what happened. But he does have the videotape, which most people don't have. So the person who did the videotape will come forth and say, this is what I saw. I saw X, Y, and Z, and this is the result of what I saw. And the other people, if there were other people around, they would testify. I assume, you know, the man had asthma. They might have somebody in there to talk about police procedures or whether this guy overstepped his bounds. I know that a chokehold is illegal in New York State. And, you know, I've heard people say, well, it wasn't a chokehold. Well, that's up for the grand jury to decide.
And then you would get to the technicality of the chokehold. My question is, for the sake of this case, since we're discussing this, the DA and the police department, correct me if I'm wrong, they often work together, right, on regular cases in the administration of justice.
Yeah, but they also don't always work together. In some instances, like, for example, when I was a special prosecutor and I worked on the Howard Beach case, jurisdiction of the case was removed from DA Santucci and given to Joe Hines, and by virtue of the governor's authority, for whatever reason, they didn't think he was capable of handling that case. So, as a result, a different special prosecutor handled it. The natural prosecutor did not handle it. An indictment was received, and they got convictions.
Wow.
You know, so that's how that went.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Listen, who makes up a grand jury? How does that group of people come together?
Pretty much the same way as a petit jury. They check the voters' role. They check the driver's role. They check things like that where there are large groups of names of eligible people, meaning that they're a citizen and things like that. And, you know, they don't have a criminal pending trial. And they let these people be on the grand jury. It's regular people from, you know, the community who sit on the grand jury, and that's how they're selected. Same way a petit jury is selected, except nobody does a voir dire. No one asks them questions like if you were on a petit jury. You know, they just take the oath of office and told that they have to be fair and impartial, and that's it.
But do they volunteer for this or what? How does that happen?
No, it's not a have you ever been summons for jury duty?
No.
And you're kidding. Ever?
Kidding. I don't think so. I don't remember being summoned.
Yeah, that
I
is
need to
a
move
wild
to Jersey.
Case. Yeah. Mm. Now, because usually what happens is you just get a summons in the mail, and it's like, you know, hey, Kay, you know, report to the clerk of the Superior Court of New Jersey in the county of which you reside in. And some people go to grand jury, and some people just go to regular jury duty.
I don't remember.
That's how it was done in New York.
Well, you know, Pam, if I might, Wayne here, I'm just interjecting. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a time not too long ago that journalists, and in Kay's history, were excused from doing jury duty. So that, you know, it's only now within the last, what, 5 or 10 years?
No, maybe about five years. In New York,
oh, really?
It's within the last 20 years, because I could tell you, or maybe the last 15 years,
yeah.
I was actually a juror, and I do believe my daughter was about 5 or so, because I was very excited about being on a jury, because usually lawyers aren't on a jury either, and they had about 8-7 lawyers on the jury, so I knew where that was going from the beginning.
Do you think that my press credentials meant something? Because I have press credentials. I had at that time press credentials with New York and New Jersey.
That's what I'm saying. You might have been confused because
absolutely.
Of that. Absolutely.
I really believe, Kay, that it must have something to do with it, because I can't believe that you'd never been summoned for jury duty. Unless it was a reason. Most people don't want to go. Like I told you, I was excited about going, and we ended up having a mistrial, which I knew was going to happen. Anytime you have more than one lawyer in the room, you will never have an agreement, much less 7.
Oh, God. Anyway, Pam,
yeah.
Lisa is talking to you. You'll have to come back.
Oh, it's a pleasure being here. Yes, I'll have to tune in from now on. I'm going on vacation, and I won't be here. But when I come back in November, I'll make sure I get in touch.
Okay, please do.
And listen. Thank you all so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Pam.
Looking
forward to seeing you. Yeah. So, I don't remember ever being on the grand jury or even asked to be on a
really?
Grand jury. I would have loved
or
it.
Or a regular jury as well. And I think it's a lot more common for the average person to get a summons to just be on a regular jury than a grand jury. I don't know. That seems, and maybe that's a question I should have asked Ben while we had her, maybe. But it seems that grand jury is a little bit more rare, obviously, because they have to decide whether the cases go to
go to trial, right. Yeah, no, you're right, and I know that grand jurors are paid more than what the average jurors get, but in New York, they're very strict. I just managed to escape trial here a couple of weeks ago because, you know, I cited the death of my family and all that, and I was able to, they were willing to waive me. But, you know, the deal is that you could go to jail if you don't serve, and they check your tax records. All mm-hmm. that stuff, but I, you know, it dawned on me the reason why you would not have been called Kay, because you were so prominent and in the media during that period. And again, I don't know if Jersey law is different from New York, but I do remember when everyone was called to serve. I mean, even Donald Trump has been called to Manhattan criminal court and federal court from time to time, and you could try to get out of it. But sooner or later, even if you just sit there, you got to serve. You know, the last time I was called to even a federal case, it was, I don't know if you remember, there was an issue of insider trading, and there was this prominent Indian national who worked for a hedge fund, and he had, was accused of stealing millions and millions of dollars. And there were about 150 jurors who were called in for federal service. And I was among the 150. And then what they do, they put you in this huge courtroom, and they sort of whittle you down. They, you know, the lawyers take turns selecting who they want to call. And my name was called. And among the questions that were asked, in this case was were you biased towards people who, you know, fraudulently invested money somewhere and never got the return? And I had, well, I'm not going to go into the history about that, but the bottom line is I had issues about certain investments that I've experienced. And then they also asked if I knew anybody who worked in the activist community who basically had a bad name with the police department. Well, I raised my hand again. I said, I'm a good friend of Al Sharpton. That
who's
made the press, and I got dismissed.
That's probably the reason why I was never called. I wouldn't have called in New York.
Go ahead, I'm sorry, Ma.
I said I wouldn't be called in New York anyway, and that was probably the reason why I was not called also, because we were all involved with Al Sharpton. So.
Right, all of us,
That's a possibility. But the thing that you just said about, did you have, they asked the lawyer, what do they call it, expulsion or exclusion or whatever, but because I've served jury here when I was living in Jersey, and quiet as it's kept, I've got notices in California. I received them, but somehow they got lost. But they, what you just said was the lawyer excused you because asking if you had a bias against people who fraudulently invested money. But that's like that's like asking people if you have a bias against people who broke the law. When you heard that, that sounded just so ridiculous, and it's such a lawyer question, but it seems that it's ridiculous. Of course you're going to have bias as somebody against somebody who fraudulently invests money. I mean, that's pretty much stealing. So,
I'm in agreement with you, and the thing is, I don't remember verbatim the way the question was posed, but I had been in that very courtroom 3 weeks before, and I was in my own trial regarding an investment with friends of your mother. No, I'm probably kidding.
Who is that?
But, you know, the deal is that I was like, you know, my case lasted a good 21 hours before, you know, it had gone back deadlocked several times. And then, you know, it was just a situation where I lost, but it could have gone either way. And that had made the papers. So I was shocked when I got home. All of a sudden, I was being called to serve. And of all cases, I didn't expect to be called for that one. But the bottom line is that, you know, I mean, they look for certain, you know, the way these questions are asked by the defense and the prosecution, they want to get a particular profile of a person who they think is going to win the case. And, you know, I mean, I was going to sit there and perjure myself by saying I wasn't a participant. I even told the judge, I said, all you got to do is just look at the, ask your colleague, the Chief Justice, and look at the papers. Google my name, you know, it was all in the Post and the Daily News. Not that I wanted that exposure, but it was like that.
Right.
You know. So it's a crazy thing, but I tell you, maybe it's a little different in Jersey, and all the more reason, you know, to be in that environment because, you know, I it's not to say that I hate jury duty, but sometimes, you know, it pops up at a time sometimes when you just don't really feel like being a participant. But then I look
always
at the fine and the jail time associated with the fine. I say, you know.
I want to spend a couple minutes on what's happening in Ferguson. You know, Missouri. Garner case, but also the amount of people coming out to demonstrate, not only there but in another state also. So, what are your feelings, you and Eric? What are your feelings about that?
Well, I personally believe that this is a story that shouldn't die. The same way they're focusing so much on Ebola, this is just as deadly, and it's a horrific set of circumstance because it's part of police culture. Just what you could easily juxtapose what went on in Staten Island with what goes on in Ferguson. You know,
exactly.
It's the same thing that's been happening the last 30 years. I don't need to tell you, Kay, how many stories you've covered, I've covered, you know, resulting in the same kind of situation, and it's horrific. But because it's not as sexy as a deadly disease and a mysterious or a tropical disease. Perhaps it's been wiped off to a certain extent off the front page, but to me, as a black man, you know, walking the face of the earth, it's something that we all worry about, you know? And I know, Eric, you concur with me on that one.
Absolutely. At this point, I'm looking at it kind of a different perspective of the Ferguson situation, because it's something that, from my perspective, it's clear that the police force is trying to find a way to let this guy get off. And the power structure within Ferguson is trying to find a way, some reasonable doubt that they can find to justify this guy killing this young man. And the way they responded afterwards, I think when you leave the, and I'm veering off here from my larger point, which I'll get to, but I think when you leave the kid's body in the street for 4 hours, I think that's a part of shock. And I think because I don't think that that's a regular protocol. Maybe it is that a suspect gets killed or whatever, but they at least cover them up in a crime scene. And I'm pretty sure about that. And they cordon off. I'm sorry. You were trying to say?
Yeah, I'm saying that the police department was sending a message to the African American community. That's exactly what it was.
Well, I don't know about that, but what I do know is that what I'm saying is the response. To it seemed as if something was done wrong. You know, when people do things that are done correctly and matter-of-factly, and this is the procedure, there's a procedure that ensues. The cops get in a shootout with a real criminal. A criminal gets killed in the shootout in response. Police come, the court. I mean, I'm going basically all TV from what I've seen and the few things I've seen in the street driving by. They come, they cordon off the area, they do this, they do that, they cover up the person, you know, because obviously they don't want the good citizens to see the criminal that's there bleeding. But in this scenario, the young man wasn't covered up for 4 hours, lay in the street, dead. So it seems like the reaction to the action that was enacted on the guy was different, as if something was done wrong. And I'm just looking at how they're responding, why they're taking so long to respond to whether or not they're going to bring an indictment against this guy. It seems that they're trying to find a way, some way, some slimmer of hope that they can present to get this guy off, where he's not going to have to account for his actions. And secondly, the bigger picture is I think that Ferguson created an opportunity for the militarization, obviously, of police forces, but also for them to practice those tactics of crowd control, of how to put down resistance, so to speak, from their perspective. As the pigment of the population or the racial makeup of the population changes, the top of the triangle, so to speak, of the pyramid, will need to control the bottom of the pyramid, if you follow me. So these exercises that are presented in crowd control, I think, are exercises on how we can suppress the masses in the minority. If we have a small number of troops, how can those troops overcome the larger number of troops, so to speak, on the battlefield? And that's done by technology. That's done by having better weapons, bigger bombs, drone predators. When you have, you know, the other army with rifles and maybe grenades or whatever. So you can get more done with a smaller force because you have superior technology. And maybe this presents an opportunity because where society is going, maybe that dominant culture is not going to be any dominant anymore, but they still have to maintain a way to control that burgeoning or what will be that dominant culture. The best example I can draw, the similarity I can draw, is how South Africa was maintained for so many years where a small minority controlled a large majority.
I'd like to get in here also. I'm thinking about the militarization of the police departments around the country, especially in those areas that have no or very few African American or Latino policemen. Okay?
Right.
Now, the military, why in the world would they need tanks, you know, for their community? Why in the world would they need AK-47s? Why in the world would they need grenades? Remember the cop also that broke the window of this couple with their two children in the back because the man wasn't wearing a seatbelt. Now, what, you know, those policemen were guilty of that, and especially if they were on video, you know, the people in the community are getting tired of that kind of stuff. So you
right.
see people, you know, really, you know, getting together, forming these big movements, and it's going, people are not going to be allowing that. And we don't want that kind of thing happening, the militarization of this country based on race, you know, to be an alternative. But that's what it's leading to. And people really have to understand that you have to live together or apart, which can be dangerous. But anyway,
I agree. It's got to stop somewhere. I mean, the thing is, what they're doing out there is equivalent to New York's 48-hour rule. And it seems so sophomoric and primitive that they would leave someone's body. I mean, there's no reason why a coroner couldn't come and even take pictures and do an outline as they do on TV. You know, I'm assuming they do that in most places at the sign of a police setting or crime. You know, just to give an outline of what the body was like, the trajectory of the bullet being shot and fired and all that stuff. You know, there was no reason to leave him lying in the state that he was in. And I think in many instances after 4 hours, you're certainly not sending a subtle message. It's very apparent, you know, what you're trying to do here. And, you know, we've got to stand up. It's one thing to turn around and vote, demonstrate and so on and so forth, but we got to use our power in the voting box. You know, we have to, you know, get people who look like us representing us. And even if they don't, they have to have the progressive thoughts that we share in terms of championing the causes that we find important to us for our survival. And you're absolutely right. I said this last week. There was a little sketch on Saturday Night Live 2 weeks ago where, you know, there was this discussion of the population shift from white to brown to black in this country. And the deal is that the skit was very funny in that, you know, white folks trying to figure out how they could still be in charge with all these minorities, so-called minorities living in this continental United States. But, you know, all kidding aside, sometimes I wonder, you know.
Yeah,
and I'm certain, Eric, that's crossed your mind and yours, Kay.
Yeah, I have to interrupt right now because we just have about 7 more minutes. And I want to get to some, you know, nicer things going on. By the way, Wayne, you missed a wonderful event in Newark last week. And Eric,
I'm sorry.
and Eric also, you know, I forget where you guys were, but Vonda's, Duke's, Jazz Club, and, you know, Newark and New York, we're giving New York like a little bit of some competition here with jazz. Loads of people. The A-list was out for Vonda's, Duke's Club. This is a new jazz club in downtown Newark. You couldn't even get into the open house and the party that she had there on Friday. So I want to say congratulations to Vonda McPherson because he's very young. Well, not very young, but young. Female business person and good friend of ours. And, you know, everything was absolutely perfect. The interior decorator, Eric, as you know, is Terry the Haskins, who's a friend of Lisa's, and Lisa's a friend of Vonda's, and everybody had such a great time. And as I said, the A-list, I have to laugh when I say this, the A-list of New Jersey was there. They were there, rather. Good music, good, wonderful people, just a wonderful time. There were so many people there that there are a few streets closed off, you know, and that's very unusual for downtown Newark for the opening of a club. Okay? So, you missed it.
Well, I hope the next time I get out there to see, because I need to update my social environment, you know, widen my circle, You know, it just seems as I've gotten older now that the fish aren't biting in the same direction as they used to. So I have to go where the fish are. You know,
just in our last couple of minutes, you know, we really forgot in the discussion, the in-depth discussion we had for the past 55 minutes, and we're coming up on just about five months. You know, the Ebola disease is really the red hot story and something that, you know, from a health perspective, the United States, we really need to try and get a handle of, obviously. And there's a whole bunch of myriad of things that we're going to have to try and discuss next week. But we're, you know, we're hoping that they could get under control. There's another nurse, I'm sure that you both will realize, there's another nurse.
Yeah.
That was tested. And she flew on a plane after she was sick. I guess she didn't know. But, you know, I was talking to my sisters, and I was talking about the Ebola not wanting to fly on planes after that or whatever. And they kind of laughed. But, you know, so this is how some of these diseases kind of spread exponentially. And when they don't seem to have a real handle on exactly how it is spread, you know, the worst thing, obviously, is for something to be airborne disease or infection. Like the common cold is pretty much airborne, you know, when somebody sneezes around you, and if you happen to breathe it in. And so there's so many conflicting reports. I guess that's what I'm saying, is that we're hoping that the American public can really start to get some really sound advice or sound information about the disease as the authorities kind of get a handle on it. Just in the last couple of minutes we have, I'm wondering what you both think about that.
I tell you, it's one of the most frightening things I've ever seen. I knew about Ebola years ago, and like AIDS, and I saw what was going on in Africa when that became newsworthy information when it first surfaced. I feared that if nothing was done to stop it and contain it there, that eventually we'd be threatened, as now we see. Our president is extremely concerned about the likelihood of it being, spreading throughout the world. And I had a chance. I was channel surfing before I went on, and of course Bill O'Reilly, who I detest, you know, is talking about we West Africans, we can't bring them to this country. They shouldn't be on flights and yada, yada, yada. I mean, if they were coming out of Ireland, it'd be a different story if they were focused on disease. I mean, the hot spot is Africa. The treatment should be done largely there. But I don't see where we could restrict travel, you know, in a country this size. And it's our history that we have our arms open and, you know, we welcome everyone, you know, but we have to figure out a way to continue that without having this fear of riding on the subway or even being in a plane, you know?
All right.
What do you think,
Bob?
Go ahead, Eric. We're coming to the end of our show. Eric?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Okay, we're coming up on the end. I was just trying to see if you wanted to get in there. I could see that we're up on 153. But we want to encourage everybody to listen to us once again on the Kay Thompson Live Show every Wednesday 8 to 9 on Blog Talk Radio. Listen to us next week.
Next Wednesday, 8 to 9 a.m. on Kay Thompson Live. Bye, Eric. Bye, Queen.
Okay, Kay. Have a good day. Thanks again.
Bye,
Eric, you too.
See you later.
And Brianna.
Yes. Thank you for having me, Miss Thompson.
Perdida, caramba, qué ingrato y mal proceder. Ella me hizo beber, ella me hizo un perdido. A la droga me tiré, amigo mío, y a la cárcel fui llevado. Los amigos me olvidaron, solo mi madre lloraba.
pedía y rogaba que se salvara su hijo. Recuerden lo que les digo, que en la prisión, en la cama, solo nuestra madre nos ama, caramba. No hay dinero, no hay amigo, linda Guajira, mi son te llama.
I don't know why they can't hear me, but, you know.
It's because that happens with, you know, a lot of phones, actually.